session number 20300, reel 4.
Mr. Cooper, reel 4.
After that, we tended often treat them as a bit of a joke. They strutted pompously around. The defiance which I had felt before, you couldn't keep on being defiant. One just accepted them, and one could live. I did understand the military discipline. I mean, the face smacking and things which one got occasionally, they did to each other all the time. It was part of their military discipline, and we were part of the military discipline, and just tended to accept that. There were one or two. There was one terrible incident when the crew of one of these American bombers were badly burnt and brought into solitary confinement, and they weren't given any treatment and their burns. And when our people were allowed to treat them, there were maggots crawling out where their eyes were, and they smelt and died in agony. It was a terrible case. It was a one-off one, but after the war, I didn't feel any particular bitterness. I just got on with my life, really. And it was only later on that I started getting interested. I still kept up with certain friends, but I got more interested in the war again, the war in Burma again, and in starting to write things. But by that time, my attitude to the Japanese had changed. I'd read quite a lot about them and understood. And some of the books, say like Lawrence van der Post and people who've got sort of the not these people go on making money out of writing our horrors, but people with objectivity and I studied history myself. I was basically studying history scholarship to university, and I'm always interested in these things, and I changed my views quite a bit, and I was asked, I suppose about 1991, I suppose. Yes, that's right. Some years ago now, I was asked to join the Burma Campaign Fellowship Group, who is a main raison d'etre, is a reconciliation with the Japanese. And I was going to go out to Japan. I was asked to go out twice as their guest, but the first time I refused because my wife got terribly ill and I couldn't go. And the second time, this arthritis, I felt that having heard from a friend of mine who'd been on one of these tours are fairly exhausting, and you've had to lug your luggage a bit. And I just felt my arthritis was too bad and I didn't go. But I did see the Japanese when they came over here, and I do, as you probably see from my book, show that I feel it's time to hold out the hand of friendship to Japan. It's, I'm in a minority in that, but I can make some excuses for them, not for everything. And in my book, I don't mince my words at times, but I think they were caught up in this system. And they also had this other thing that we were all dishonored men because we'd surrendered. As I point out, they made no distinction between perhaps one, two had given up too easily. But you've got, the British officers and the Gurkhas when the Satang Bridge was blown up. Gurkhas can't swim. They could have swum. But they stay with their troops. Then there's a friend of mine who written a book about the thing, who was a headmaster of Norwich Grammar School in the end, Philip Stibbe. He was left a behind by as a chinned officer with a bullet in his chest. Then there was another friend, a New Zealand fighter pilot, whose plane crashed at 200 miles an hour, and he somehow survived, unconscious. Well, they were all treated as dishonoured men. Well, they weren't dishonourable men. And it was, well, that rather used to annoy me, but I don't think they've changed that terribly, the veterans we met. I think they do feel, and as I write in my book, that they've got their code of honour and we have ours. I mean, if a British officer ran away from a battle, he wouldn't expect to be treated, you know, acclaimed by his companions. And to them, it was disgrace. I can live with that now. It doesn't worry me. It annoyed me at the time to it that way.
Why should the American aircrew not have gotten any treatment?
What happened there was that in the last year, the original RAF and Americans who were shot down were treated just the same as us. I mean, when they were captured, they might have been a bit unlucky, possibly in some cases, but mostly they were taken in and interrogated and all those things. But they were not treated any differently from the army. In the last year, orders came from Tokyo, I think it was. It may have been Singapore area or something, but I think it was very right back to Tokyo. The American air, because of what they were doing at Japanese mainland and things like that, were war criminals, the airmen were. So they were all treated much more severely. They were segregated from the rest of us. And they spent some time in that solitary, the things I've talked about. And this crew, quite why that happened so badly, I don't know, but it just did. I think the doctor, and I had nothing to do with them, I think the doctor in charge of them was not, did not behave as he should behave at all. And I think he was actually convicted, maybe hanged or shot as a war criminal. But the orders came, the last commandant we had at the jail, he was treated, he let us go free when we were on this march out. We all thought he was an extremely reasonable man, but he was convicted as a war criminal, had term of imprisonment because of this treatment of the Allied aircrew. But he was doing that on orders from Tokyo. He wasn't the sadistic swine that we had earlier.
Going back to the before you were captured, why do you think the CO didn't respond when you warned him about Japanese ahead?
I don't know. I mean, he was walking on. I think he realized that the battle was over, that we'd been defeated. Although I don't think he realized how much praise history has given to us. Perhaps everything he'd worked for, he'd gone. I don't know. He didn't answer me. He didn't speak to me. I did ask him what he was doing. He didn't answer. He just walked with his walking stick.
Would he have heard you?
He'd have heard me then when I said, because it was quiet.
You also said the Japanese attacked for 4 hours. What was the nature of their attack?
They attacked with fixed bayonets and drawn swords. They came out into the open, a slight open bit to get where two of our companies were, My friend John Randall, who became a brigadier, who was company commander then, who's a second lieutenant, said the first we saw of them as they came out was the moonlight glinting on those awesome long Japanese bayonets. And then they came out and then they started shouting and shrieking at the top of their voices as they charged. And they came against two companies who performed extremely well. And it went on for 4 hours. They counterattacked and things like that.